wondering where you've been. Now and then I think about you and me. No use fighting about things we can't recall, 'cause it don't matter now at all. Just come on in, baby, we'll laugh and sing, and we'll make love, let the telephone ring. Ring, ring, doorbell ring, baby, come on in, I got Mel Blanc on the radio. I'm glad you came around, I've been feeling down, talking to Tony and Mario. You know they make good conversation, still it ain't no consolation. 'Cause I got love, baby, I'll give you some. And if somebody come, let the doorbell ring.
You're listening to The Baby Bunker. I'm your host, Amelia Eagle. It's nearing the end of April, but this month is more than just a visit from the Easter Bunny. On today's show, we're also celebrating Whale Fest and the returning of the humpback whales in spring. It's also National Poetry Month, and Earth Day was yesterday. So get this, we have poems about whales on Earth. And on top of that, we of course have stories, a lesson finding something called a sit spot, and it wouldn't be complete without our mad scientist, Chloe Ivanoff, teaching us how to make lava lamps on the fly. All that and more, coming up.
Let the wedding bells ring. Hand in hand, we'll stand upon the sand with the preacher man. Let the wedding bells ring.
Alright kids, brace yourself for my best bud, the harebrained brainiac, who eats a lot of beans, Chloe Ivanoff.
Hello, radio kids. Have you ever seen a lava lamp? Did you know you can make your very own temporary lava lamp at home? What color would you like to make your lava? Grab an adult and gather a few ingredients for your lava lamp. You will need food coloring, vegetable oil, water, Alka-Seltzer tablets, and a wide bottle. This can be a fancy drinking glass or a wide glass vase. Look for clear, non-colored glass to have the best view for your lava lamp. Again, you will need food coloring, vegetable oil, water, Alka-Seltzer tablets, and a wide bottle. A wide bottle can be a fancy drinking glass or a wide glass vase. Look for clear, non-colored glass to have the best view for your lava lamp. I'm Once you have gathered the items, fill the jar about 3/4 of the way with vegetable oil. Next, pour water into the jar, leaving about 2 to 3 inches of space at the top. Depending on how much oil you have to spare, you can use less oil. Just use a ratio of about 3 to 1 for oil to water in this project. Then wait a couple minutes to allow both liquids to settle. Notice as the two liquids settle, they separate and form two distinct layers. Can you tell which layer is the top? The oil will settle over the water layer because the oil is less dense than water. This is due to water molecules being smaller than molecules of oil, allowing them to pack more closely together, creating a denser liquid. Next, decide what color you want your lava to be, and place about 10 drops of the food coloring into the jar. Watch as the food coloring moves through the oil and sits for a moment on the water-oil line. In a few moments, the drops of food coloring should break through into the water layer. Make sure all the food coloring droplets have made it through the oil-water line before moving to the final step. Drop a few Alka-Seltzer tablets into the jar and watch your lava lamp come to life. The Alka-Seltzer will fall to the bottom of the jar and your reaction will take place between the tablets and the water, producing carbon dioxide gas bubbles. Carbon dioxide is also known as CO2. These CO2 bubbles will stick to water droplets and will be less dense than the water and oil, so they will rise to the top. Once the bubbles reach the surface, the CO2 will release into the air and the water will sink back down to the bottom of the jar. The process will last as long as Alka-Seltzers are reacting with the water. Once the Alka-Seltzers have all dissolved, their reaction will be complete. You can prolong the life of your temporary lava lamp by adding more Alka-Seltzer tablets. However, at some point, the ratio of water to Alka-Seltzer tablets will be off balance and little to no CO2 gas bubbles will form. All right, radio kids, get out there and make some lava lamps.
Geez, Chloe, I can't believe how much you know about lava and lamps. I wonder, can you make a rainbow lava lamp? Post a picture of what you make on KMXC's Facebook. Up next, we have a really special guest, Ani Thomas, the kids' librarian. She's here to spread to the world her love of poems and whales. Listen up.
The Great Blue Whale by Carrie Hardy. Nobody knows where he goes, nor what he does in the deep, nor why he sings like a bird without wings, nor where he eats and sleeps. The blue whale roves through watery groves, his heart the size of a car. His tongue on a scale makes zoologists pale. It's as heavy as elephants are. The blue whale's vein, without stress or strain, could be swum down by you or me. He's the biggest feature that ever did creature the sky, the land, or the sea. Here are some facts about blue whales. Blue whales are the largest animals living on Earth and probably the largest animals to have ever lived on Earth. They can be 100 feet long and weigh more than 300,000 pounds. A fun fact about the blue whale is that their babies are 6,000 pounds when they're born. And each day they drink their mama's milk, which can be 100 gallons and gain up to 200 pounds a day. Blue whales were also hunted to near extinction, and so now we're protecting them, and they're on the endangered species list. Here's another poem, and this one is about the humpback whale, also a huge whale, but not nearly as big as the blue whale. It's called Hums of the Humpback. There is a mammal called the humpback whale, and if you weighed him, he'd break your scale. He's 50 feet long and 80,000 pounds. But this jumbo whale makes beautiful sounds. He swims in the ocean, and as he jollies along, this humpback whale sings magical songs. And before the people filled up the ocean with ships and noise and lots of commotion, the song of the whale could go easily forth from the pole in the south to the pole in the north, from the top of the earth all the way back down. He once was the whale who was heard world round. The humpback whales can often be seen off of Kodiak, and you can see them from the beaches, or sometimes you go out in a boat and you can see them. They're usually about 45 feet long and can weigh up to 80,000 pounds, not the 300,000 pounds of the blue whale.
Whales really are amazing. Have you ever heard whales talking to each other? Give a listen to this. What on earth do you think those humpbacks were saying? Maybe discussing foreign politics, or divulging the secret location of buried underwater treasure. Can you draw a picture of a whale on a trampoline? First, back to Ani.
Here's another poem for you. And this one's a little bit silly. It's from Shel Silverstein, and it goes like this. Have you heard of tiny Melinda May, who ate a monstrous whale? She thought she could. She said she would. So she started in right at the tail. And everyone said, you're much too small. But that didn't bother Melinda at all. She took little bites and she chewed very slow, just like a good girl should. And in 89 years, she ate that whale because she said she would. And that's the end of the poem.
Baby beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above and the sea below, and a little white whale on the go. Baby beluga, baby beluga, is the water warm? Is your mama home with you so happy? Way down yonder where the dolphins play, where you dive and splash all day. Waves rolling and the waves roll out, see the water squirting out of your spout. Baby beluga, oh baby beluga, sing your little song, sing for all your friends, we like to hear you.
The Snail and the Whale by Julia Donaldson, pictures by Alex Scheffler. This is the tale of a tiny snail and a great big gray-blue humpback whale. This is a rock as black as soot, and this is a snail with an itchy foot. The sea snail slithered all over the rock and gazed at the sea and the ships in the dock. And as she gazed, she sniffed and sighed. The sea is so deep and the world is so wide. How I long to sail, said the tiny snail. These are the other snails in the flock who all stuck tight to the smooth black rock and said to the snail with the itchy foot, be quiet, don't wiggle, sit still, stay put. But the tiny sea snail sniffed and sighed, then cried, I've got it. I'll hitch a ride. This is the trail of the tiny snail, a silvery trail that looped and curled and said, ride wanted around the world. This is the whale who came one night when the tide was high and the stars were bright, a humpback whale, immensely long, who sang to the snail a wonderful song of shimmering ice and coral caves and shooting stars and enormous waves. And this is the tale of the humpback whale. He held it out of the starlit sea and said to the snail, come, sail with me. This is the sea, so wild and free, that carried the whale and the snail on his tail to towering icebergs and far-off lands, with fiery mountains and golden sands. These are the waves that arched and crashed and foamed and frolicked and sprayed and splashed the tiny snail on the tail of the whale. These are the caves beneath the waves, where colorful fish with feathery fins and sharks with hideous toothy grins swim past the whale and the snail on his tail. And this is the sky, so vast and high, sometimes sunny and blue and warm, sometimes filled with a thunderstorm, with zigzag lightning flashing and frightening the tiny snail on the tail of the whale. And she gazed at the sky, the sea, the land, the waves and the caves and the golden sand. And she gazed and gazed, amazed by it all. And she said to the whale, "I feel so small." But then came the day the whale lost his way. These are the speedboats running a race, zigging and zooming all over the place, upsetting the whale with their ear-splitting roar, making him swim too close to the shore. Oh no, the whale has hit the beach. This is the tide slipping away. And this is the whale lying beached in the bay. "Quick, off the sand, back to the sea," cried the snail. "I can't move on land, I'm too big," moaned the whale. The snail felt helpless and terribly small. Then, "I've got it," she cried, and she started to crawl. "I must not fail," said the little tiny snail. This is the bell on the school in the bay, ringing the children in from their play. And this is the teacher holding her chalk, telling the class, "Sit straight, now don't talk." And this is the board, as black as soot. And this is the snail with the itchy foot. "A snail, a snail," the teacher turns pale. "Look," said the children, "it's leaving a trail." This is the trail of the tiny snail, silvery trail saying, "Save the whale." And it's written right across the blackboard, "Save the whale." These are the children running from school, fetching the firemen, digging a pool, squirting and spraying to keep the whale cool. And everybody is down on the beach now. There's an excavator digging a hole. Firemen are there with their hoses, keeping the whale nice and cool. The children are helping to dig the trench, and everybody's there helping the whale. And this is the tide coming into the bay, and these are the villagers shouting, "Hooray!" as the whale and the snail travel safely away. Back to the dock and the flock on the rock, who said, "Oh, how time has flown, and look how you've grown." And the whale and the snail told their wonderful tale of shimmering ice and coral caves and shooting stars and enormous waves, and of how the snail, so small and frail, with her looping, curly, silvery trail, saved the life of the humpback whale. Then the humpback whale held out his tail, and on crawled snail after snail after snail. It looks like they're all going on a trip. And they sang to the sea as they all set sail on the tail of the gray blue humpback whale. And that is the end of the story, The Snail and the Whale by Julia Donaldson.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time, baby going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife, catch more fish than you. Many fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. I went on down to my favorite fishing hole, baby grabbed me a pole and line. Threw my pole on and caught
caught a 9-pound catfish. Now you know I brought him home for supper time. Proving any fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relay. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. Baby brother about to run me out of my mind. Say, can I go fishing with you? I took him on down to the fishing hole. Now, what do you think that he did do? Pull a great big fish out the bottom of the pond. Now, he laughed and jumped because he was real gone. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. Put him in the pot, baby, put him in the pan, honey, cook him till he's nice and brown. Make a batch of buttermilk, whole cakes, mama, and chew them things, and then chomp them on down, singing any fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relay. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing to play the blues. That I would like to relay. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, mama's going fishing, and the baby going fishing too.
Thank you so much, Ani, for sharing those poems and stories and just a few reasons of what make whales such incredible animals. Since we're getting in touch with nature this episode, it would only be right if Kate Peters shares an activity with you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kate Peters, and I'm calling in from the Bay Area in California today. I run a nature program that brings kids and adults out into nature to learn about things like wildlife tracking, edible and medicinal plants, bird language, ancestral skills such as fire making or fire by friction, and developing the use of our senses to perceive the patterns and details in nature. Last week, I shared an activity with you called the sense meditation. And as a quick reminder, a sense meditation is an activity where you take the time to focus your awareness on each of your senses to enter into the present moment as fully as possible. Finding a place outside to sit still, you close your eyes and start by focusing on the sounds that you can hear. And then you pay attention to your sense of touch, then your sense of smell, and then your sense of taste. And once you have focused on each of these senses, you open your eyes and take in all the colors, textures, and details that your eyes can see. At the end, you try to be aware of all your senses at once. And the sense meditation can become a practice in your life that brings you on a lifelong journey into greater and deeper awareness and understanding of the universe that we live in. Today, I want to share with you another fun activity that is best friends with the sense meditation, and they're meant to be practiced together. So this activity has been practiced by all peoples and cultures throughout time and is something that most humans do naturally when they are given the opportunity. This activity has many names, and the name that I use for it is the sit spot, and I learned this name from the people who introduced me to this practice. So what is a sit spot? A sit spot is a place in nature that you like and visit regularly to sit quietly so that you can pay attention to all of the little and big things that are unfolding in nature. You get to know all of the animals and plants that live in or move through your sit spot area, and you notice the changes in the seasons and in the weather. You can use the sense meditation to help you notice all the details of your sit spot. I like to use my wildlife tracking knowledge to recognize who has moved through my sit spot, and I use my knowledge of bird calls to know which birds are moving through the trees overhead. If I see a bird or a track or an insect or a plant at my sit spot that I don't recognize, I can draw or make a note about it in a notebook that I carry, and then I use a field guide or a Google search to look it up later. At my current sit spot, which is on my front porch in the middle of a suburban neighborhood, I have tracked the muddy footprints of opossum and raccoon over the sidewalks. And an antler that I left sitting out in my yard has become the local spot where squirrels and mice chew to eat calcium to strengthen their bones. In the morning, there's a local sharp-shinned hawk that flies through and terrifies all the little sparrows and these birds called towhees. So you get to know your sit spot over time, which means that you get to know the story of the land. And some of the ways that that's played out at my sit spot on my front porch is that last year in the late summer, there were three young skunks that made a den under my neighbor's tool shed, and they would come out to play on my front lawn every night. I almost got sprayed by one night, but it ran past my leg and dead, which was really exciting and kind of terrifying. A year ago, I was out on my front porch at night, and I actually saw a coyote trotting through my neighborhood. I only observed it because I was intentionally out there looking at all the things going on. 15 years ago, a valley oak acorn that rolled out of one of my harvest bags actually sprouted and is now a 25-foot-tall tree in my front yard. And, you know, the story keeps on unfolding. Only yesterday, I noticed a bird called an Anna's hummingbird, the nest woven onto a branch in my neighbor's pine tree. And the mama hummingbird was sitting on the nest, and the wind was waving her branch around wildly. And I like to imagine what that ride must be like for her. And she's out there sitting right now. So even in a suburban area, you can see all kinds of amazing things in nature when you start looking. And your own front yard is a perfect place to start practicing doing a sit spot. So if you are able to have a sit spot in a more wild area, there are a couple of things that will increase your chances of seeing more wildlife. Animals and plants need water, and choosing a sit spot that is located near a stream or a river or a pond will increase the number of animals and plants that you might see. Another area with higher numbers of animals and plants is at the edge of two ecosystems. For instance, at the edge of a forest and a meadow. The forest provides good hiding places for animals, and the meadow provides good hunting and grazing opportunities. So make sure that you choose a place where you will stay safe, and if you're young, perhaps you can start doing sit spot by having your parents sit quietly in the same place or maybe close by that's just out of sight so that you can be alone at your sit spot. If you like, you can keep your own field notebook to draw or write down observations that you make at your sit spot. At your sit spot, don't be afraid to play with nature. I like putting my feet in the water. You could go for a swim if you are next to water. Put some mud on your arms and face. You can whittle a stick with a pocket knife or catch a frog. Sometimes I crawl through the grass or chew on a willow stick. There's a lot of willows around this place that I go outside, and I like to chew on those willow sticks. And there's berries out there, and if you know how to identify berries, you can pick them. So try doing a sit spot in the early morning when the birds are singing the dawn chorus, and try doing a sit spot in the evening when the animals are returning to their beds and the owls are getting ready to fly. In closing, I love going to my sit spot to see all the mysteries of nature unfolding, and I hope that you find a sit spot too. And I hope that you have fun getting to know all of the beings in your area of nature. Thank you for listening today.
Thanks, Kate. That's all for this week on The Baby Bunker. Thank you everyone who contributed, and that includes you as listeners. I want to hear from you. Maybe if you have any good ideas about what we could talk about, or if you just want to be on the show, call me, 486-3181. Looks like Oscar called again and is requesting, you guessed it, cheese. Gotta go. See you next week.